May it please the court, Mr. Edwards. Informant filed this case as an information seeking reciprocal discipline in accordance with the procedures set forth in Rule 5.20. That rule provides that the court, with an expedited procedure for sanctioning attorneys, adjudge guilty of professional misconduct in another jurisdiction. It is an important procedure that this court noted in the Hess case. As providing the court with a streamlined process that preserves the valuable resources of the courts. The policy of reciprocity contributes in facilitating the orderly and efficient administration of lawyer discipline. That's the Hess case. In this case, respondent was adjudged guilty of professional misconduct by the United States Bankruptcy Court for the Eastern District of Missouri and suspended from practicing in that jurisdiction for 1 year. That suspension, along with the court's findings and conclusions, was affirmed by both the district court, federal district court, as well as the United States Court of Appeals for the Eighth Circuit. The basis for the federal discipline underlying the reciprocal information filed against respondent in this case was the respondent's unethical and disruptive conduct directed at the bankruptcy judge. This respondent was the protagonist with regard to the ethical misconduct regarding the failure and refusal to provide discovery requested by Ms. Stewart's counsel. As a result, we're seeking a more severe sanction against this respondent, an 18-month suspension rather than a year. Respondent has a relevant disciplinary history that also comes into play in determining that an 18-month suspension is appropriate. This respondent has been reprimanded twice by this court, including a 2004 reprimand for conduct intended to disrupt the tribunal, the same conduct for which he was disciplined by the bankruptcy court in this case. The evidence in that 2004 case was that respondent, in reacting to an adverse ruling by an associate circuit judge, rapidly approached the bench, leaned across the bench, waved his hand within inches of the judge's face, and yelled that he had been tricked by the judge. It's almost incredible, by the way, in this respondent's brief, on page 18, he claims he's never been adjudged guilty of ethical misconduct. I guess he believes that by saying so, it makes it true. The fact is he was reprimanded twice, in the case I've just described, and again in 2001, for competence fees, failure to supervise a non-lawyer support staff person, and UPL. Respondent, in this case, the bankruptcy court described the respondent's tone and demeanor as obnoxious and disrespectful. It found respondent repeatedly yelled at and interrupted the court. The respondent accused the bankruptcy court of trying to trap him and insisted that the judge did not know bankruptcy rules and procedures. Clearly, the respondent's disruptive conduct in violation of 4-3.5 was unaffected by his 2004 reprimand. The bankruptcy court found other violations of the rules. 4-3.1, filing frivolous motions to quash discovery. 4-3.2, failing to expedite litigation by filing additional motions after the court had already issued an order compelling discovery. 4-3.3, knowingly making false statements of fact to the court regarding this respondent's and his client's intent to comply with discovery. 4-3.4, failing to make diligent efforts to comply with proper discovery requests. 4-3.5, conduct intended to disrupt the tribunal. He accuses the court of dumping on Mr. Robinson. He blames the court for the respondent's situation. He argues with the court, and the court generally finds his tone and demeanor to be obnoxious in his order of June 2014. He finds a violation of 4-8.2, falsely alleging that the judge was biased because he previously served as a U.S. trustee for 3 years, although he never prosecuted actively any cases against Pratique Services. The order of June 2014 is clear. It's in depth. It describes the conduct that goes with each violation. It's not just a sanction order. It's a sanction order plus an order imposing discipline. That order was affirmed by both the district court and the Eighth Circuit. I won't repeat the basis under 5.20 for this court's ruling. Obviously, it's our belief that this court had proper jurisdiction to issue its ruling. The cases that respondent and his counsel seek to distinguish, the Coe, Carancini, Carrie and Donnie cases, are consistent with our position in this case, consistent with what we've done in the past, and clearly under this situation, we are authorized to seek reciprocal discipline under 5.20. By alleging that we should be required to file a 5.11 information, this respondent and his counsel are doing exactly what you've suggested, Judge Fischer, which is they want to do away with 5.20. Why have it if we can never use that rule when we have an order of discipline from another jurisdiction? This court is in the practice of issuing, in an expedited fashion, discipline orders under certain circumstances. 5.20 is only one of those circumstances where there's been a finding of professional misconduct in another jurisdiction. I would also point out 5.21, criminal activities. We have an expedited process for this court to take action against attorneys who engage in criminal activities. 5.23 and 5.24, lawyers who are somehow disabled from practicing law. We have an expedited process for dealing with those attorneys under Rule 5. We are not required to go through a disciplinary information with a hearing before a panel. In certain cases, 5.20 being one of them, where the court has given full due process to the attorney and issued a discipline order against the attorney. Again, I want to reiterate this: the effect of the fact that this bankruptcy judge referred his order to the district court for possible further action and referred his order to the OCDC for possible further action. The clear intent of that was for the district court to consider should the district court impose its own discipline order against respondent with regard to his license to practice before the district courts. He's already been suspended from practicing before the bankruptcy court. It was a referral to the district court for that purpose. In this regard, it's significant that the district court later affirmed the bankruptcy judge's authority and discipline order, as did the Eighth Circuit. The referral to our office was for consideration to bring to this court a possible 5.20 action for discipline of a state license, the ability to practice in state court. So the fact that there was a referral to the district court is meaningless with regard to our current action under 5.20. Appropriate discipline. This respondent knowingly, if not intentionally, engaged in a pattern of misconduct against Ms. Stewart and against the court. He's experienced in the practice of law, having practiced law for 40 years. The ABA standards for imposing lawyer sanctions support suspension in this case. Standard 6.22 provides that suspension is appropriate when a lawyer abuses his duties to the legal system by knowingly violating a court order or causing interference with a legal proceeding. This court always considers mitigators and aggravators. In mitigation, the respondent argues, well, I've never been judged guilty of professional misconduct. That's wrong. We've already covered that. He claims that he's made $30,000 in what he calls restitution to Ms. Stewart, basically saying that, well, we paid the $30,000 sanction order, so she's been made whole. I don't consider a payment of a sanction order that you're required to pay to be restitution that's made that's not forced or compelled. That is not restitution, in my view. The fact that he engaged in conduct that caused the court to issue sanctions does not mean that his payment of those sanctions warrants any mitigation by this court. It's also somewhat significant, although it's not in the brief. They claim that they have paid the restitution. It's not anywhere in a record. I will tell you the way that restitution or that sanction was paid was by executing on the appeal bond that they were forced to file before they filed their appeal. Where that appeal bond came from, I have no idea. Aggravators. In my view, the following aggravators are relevant to respondent's case. He has a prior disciplinary record, two reprimands from this court. There's a dishonest motive in his dealings with the court solely to frustrate Ms. Stewart's counsel's ability to ask a proper discovery request regarding Mr. Robinson's connection to Critique Services. There's a pattern of misconduct. Clearly, when you review the judge's order, there's many violations, all constituting a pattern of misconduct. There are multiple offenses. we consider the vulnerability of the victim. In my view, the victims of Critique Services and Mr. Robinson are the most vulnerable among us, and that should be considered in terms of what happened in this entire case. And I think it should be held against this respondent as well as Mr. Robinson. Substantial experience in the practice of law. The fact that this respondent has engaged in the practice of law for some 40 years. Based on the conclusive adjudication of professional misconduct by three federal courts, reciprocal discipline pursuant to 5.20 is appropriate. Respondent violated numerous rules regarding his duties to his client and to the legal system. He did so knowingly, he caused injury to the client, and wasted judicial resources by severely obstructing the discovery process, all for the sole purpose of concealing the relationship between Mr. Robinson and this fraudulent and corrupt entity known as Critique Services. To this day, we don't know what that connection is. Informant recommends that this respondent be indefinitely suspended based on his prior disciplinary history with no leave to apply for reinstatement for 18 months. Thank you.
Thank you.
I'd like to thank Counselor for honestly saying that to this day that he does not know the relationship between Critique Services and the respondent, Mr. Robinson. But I believe the court that we're on, Mr. Walton's case. So all of the peripheral information about Critique Services, Mr. Walton was trying to advocate for a bankruptcy attorney under the gun. So I guess when you advocate for someone in bankruptcy court, you should be quiet. Don't raise your voice. Don't walk too quickly. Don't be aggressive if you believe that you're right. What are court of appeals for if lawyers cannot advocate for their client's position? A lawyer should be sanctioned any time his client is wrong. Is that the law of the court?
Mr. Edwards, the Eighth Circuit said the bankruptcy court's order in the court's record thoroughly detailed Robinson's and Walton's misconduct and violations of the rules of professional ethics. The bankruptcy judge provided good cause for the suspension sanction and provided ample notice and opportunities to be heard to Robinson and Walton. And then it said the bankruptcy court had the authority to impose its suspension and affirm the one-year suspension.
Yes, and that the one-year suspension is over. They could reapply. And I'm saying that the sanctions in bankruptcy court just are not equal to professional misconduct. Otherwise, you wouldn't have Rule 519, just like the federal government gets two bites at the apple, when then here, Mr. Walton, as an advocate, could say, well, let's see the record. Where is the record where the judge, in a findings of fact, conclusions of law, a judge makes a record that on paragraph so-and-so, I find that Critique Services did this. You look in the record, there's no facts about Critique Services doing anything. In this record, they find Mr. Walton, and counsel admits that they don't know any of the relationship of Mr. Robinson and Critique Services, and they want to piggyback.
Well, Mr. Walton was sanctioned for his conduct to the
yes.
judge in the bankruptcy court, which would be on the record in the bankruptcy.
Yes, that's what I mean. Yes, there should be a record about what he was doing. The state court could very well believe that, yes, I believe, as we believe as an advocacy, that yes, you discipline him for a year, the year is up, whatever the fine was paid, Mr. Walton wouldn't fine $30,000. That was Mr. Robinson. I think we confuse the attorney representing Mr. Robinson with Mr. Robinson himself. And I believe that Mr. Walton, the sanction was for 1 year. We pointed out the Cole case. People committed perjury. People were held in contempt of court. Mr. Walton wasn't held in contempt of court. He was sanctioned. He didn't commit perjury. He was sanctioned. Now, the discipline for someone being an advocate, he may have raised his voice too loud. Whatever he accused the judge of bias.
So the Eighth Circuit was incorrect in affirming the sanctions, saying that there were violations, ethical misconduct, that good cause was provided in the record, and you're asking us to...
I'm asking you to look further as a matter of due process, because courts can make mistakes, that there are different standards in state, in federal court for sanctions versus misconduct. And just as the discipline officer made the mistake of confusing Mr. Walton with Mr. Robinson and saying that even today we don't know the relationship between Mr. Robinson and critique, the Court of Appeals can make a mistake with regard to a finding of fact. And this court still has the remedy when they see on the record, well, this doesn't amount to a misconduct in our view, that you still have a view. You still have a duty and a record to look at, not just as if the court's orders are the Ten Commandments. Otherwise, why the referral to the district or the district court sanctions? That's what they were talking about. And the sanctions are over. But now we have further sanctions, even though they elected in the federal district court not to impose it. So I would suggest that the rule of reciprocity does not necessarily apply in this case.
Counselor, would you anticipate if this court did suspend Mr. Walton's license as requested that the district court would then enter a reciprocal discipline order?
I don't have any experience where a federal court has jumped and enforce anything that state supreme courts do. I think that there's a case dealing with their federal power they protect. So I don't believe that the courts would automatically do this. In federal court, I believe that they believe that you're a subservient jurisdiction and you should obey whatever they say. And I'm saying that you are a body of the Missouri Constitution and that you've got a right to make your own inquiry.
Thank you. Judge Fisher, your question. I think absolutely that's what the district court's waiting for before it acts with regard to this misconduct. If this court were to suspend Mr. Walton, it would be put on a national database. It would be picked up by the district court. The court would be notified of it, and I feel comfortable that they would issue some sort of discipline. It's up to them to decide what that discipline should be, but I think they are waiting for this court to act in order for them to act. Are they going to suspend? I have no idea. Would they issue this reciprocal discipline? I think so. Mr. Edwards says, well, Mr. Walton's being sanctioned ethically for advocating for his client, Mr. Robinson. Let's be straight here. This entire case boiled down to these two attorneys doing whatever they had to do to avoid disclosing to the bankruptcy court and to Ms. Stewart's counsel whatever the relationship was between Critique Services, this corrupt entity that did nothing but prey on the vulnerable citizens of our community. He wanted to hide that relationship, even to the point of, instead of simply disgorging fees, $495, we're going to find some way, someone's going to pay this $49,000 in sanctions and attorney's fees so that we don't have to disclose what this relationship is. I have no idea why you would do that. Who knows? But the point is, that's really what was going on here. Mr. Walton was acting as the mouthpiece in the worst possible way for Mr. Robinson. And to me, they are connected to the hip in that regard. So when I talk about Mr. Robinson in this argument, it's because Mr. Walton was his mouthpiece, acting on his behalf. When they failed to timely file objections to discovery, what should they have done? Maybe they should have sought leave to file objections out of time. No, instead they simply filed objections out of time. The court struck those objections because they weren't timely. Maybe they should have responded to the discovery and maybe paid the $495 if the disgorge order was issued. No, they don't do that. They simply continue to engage in vexatious litigation in order to avoid at all costs disclosing whatever this relationship is. They falsely represented to the court that they intended to comply with the discovery and then purposefully failed to do so. Their responses when they did file them were nothing but a bunch of objections to the discovery, and the court deemed that to be grossly inadequate once they filed responses. They made unfounded personal attacks on opposing counsel. They attacked Ms. Stewart, saying you should dismiss her case because she lied to the bankruptcy court in her petition. Why did she lie? She lied because Critique Services told her she had to claim a residence in the city, that she had to claim people who were not her dependents as dependents. Then they circle back around and say, now you should dismiss her petition because of her lies. It's just a terrible situation, and I think it's up to this court at this point to draw a line in the sand and say, yes, they're subject to reciprocal discipline, and they should be disciplined severely by this court. Thank you.
Thank you. Case will be submitted.